dagsnytt klokka ett. I en melding vi har fått inn ifra Møre og deromkring, påstås det at Jesus blitt sett. Åh, Jesus tilbake. Åh, som i går kveld, så smør jeg skivet tom og tenk deg om. Skal du ta brunost eller marmelade?
Hallo, hier ist Hamburg, hier ist das Krimi-Blog, hier ist der vierte Krimi-Blog-Podcast. Schön, dass Sie reinhören. Musik von der norwegischen Band Die Diere, was so viel heißt wie Die da. Der Song Töffe Tom aus dem Jahre 93. Warum das? Die Diere, in Norwegen sehr erfolgreich in den 90er Jahren, hierzulande eher unbekannt. Bekannter dürfte der Sänger dieser Gruppe sein, das ist nämlich der Krimi-Autor Jo Nesbø. Jo Nesbø, 1960 geboren, blickt auf eine sehr wechselvolle und sehr abwechslungsreiche Karriere zurück. Er war, wie wir eben gehört haben, Rockmusiker, er war Finanzanalyst in Norwegen und seit 1997 ist er auch erfolgreicher Autor von sehr spannenden Kriminalromanen. 1997 erblickte sein Harry Hole das Licht der Buchhandlung in dem ersten Band, der bei uns in dem Titel Der Fledermausmann erschienen ist. Darin schickt Jo Nesbø seinen Harry Hole nach Australien, um dort einen Serienkiller zu finden. Jo Nesbø hat mittlerweile 6 Bücher um seinen Helden Harry Hole geschrieben. 4 davon gibt es in der deutschen Übersetzung. Ganz aktuell ist der 5. Fall erschienen, das 5. Zeichen. Jo Nesbø war in der letzten Woche auf Lesereise durch Deutschland und ich hatte die Gelegenheit, mit ihm ein Interview zu führen. Das Interview gibt es jetzt hier im Krimi-Blog-Podcast zu hören, natürlich in englischer Sprache. Ich wünsche interessante Unterhaltung dabei. Mr. Nesbø, your 5th book, The Devil's Star. Harry Hole, your detective, has to catch a serial killer who was on the loose in Oslo, in the summer of Oslo. And this reminds me of the first book of Harry Hole, where he also has to catch a serial killer, but in Australia. So is this some kind of going back to your roots, and is there a connection between this fifth and this fifth books, the first book and the fifth books?
Both yes and no. It is a serial killer, but it's two distinctively different cases, but I have been focused on serial killing. It started, like you said, with the first book, and one may ask, does the world need another book about serial killers? And I think yes, it does.
But why?
Maybe because my project in writing is to try to find answers to some very simple but difficult questions. Does evil exist and does crime exist? Because the deeper you dig into serial killing, the less you understand, or the less I understand. There has been a good deal of research done on serial killing, and it all comes down to almost nothing. So it's a very confusing area, and therefore maybe also a very interesting area. And it is for a fact there has been much more serial killing than what we know, because the case is that the typical serial killer gets away with it, and we have we imagine that serial killers kill like they do, for example, in the movie Seven, that they have rituals, that they leave signs so that the police will always see a connection between different murders, which in reality is not the case. I mean, most serial killers are brought to trial years after they have started killing, well, it's a sad fact that many of them are never. The police don't even realize that there's a serial killing going on. There's just people getting lost, and then people are found dead in different ways. And most killings, I think, you can identify with. I mean, if you kill for a reason, if you kill out of love, or out of hate or out of jealousy, or you kill for money. But serial killing is normally just killing for killing's sake, and that is so hard to understand. It's like the extreme destruction. So serial killing is a very interesting place to go if you want to find an answer to the question, does evil exist?
So this question, does evil exist, is one reason why you are writing crime fiction.
Yes, absolutely. And also a connected question, does crime exist? And it all comes down to, of course, how do you define evil and how do you define crime? There's a famous Norwegian kriminolog, I don't know what that is in German, or Nils Christie, and he has written a book where he asks the question, does crime exist? And what he means by that is that it all depends on what kind of society you're born into, and what time you were born in, and what's the culture there. I mean, you have behavior that in some times and in some cultures are perfectly normal and even for the good of society, while in other societies they would, for the same behavior, be put behind bars and you know, they're called sociopaths or psychopaths.
What came to my mind is that there are many Scandinavian crime fiction books where you can find some kind of anti-hero. They all, for example, you have Harry Hole, he is an alcohol addict. We have Mankell's Wallander, who is very depressive. So, and this is very often found in the Scandinavian crime fiction. So do you think, is this something about, that's something to say about the Scandinavian society?
I think that you may be correct that in not only Scandinavian crime, but in Scandinavian literature, you have this like emphasis on the dark side, on melancholy, and on maybe the loner, the lonely person. On the other hand, I think it's common for most storytelling all over the world that you want to give your hero an Achilles heel in some way, so something that that make the hero destructible, because the suspense is not about some kind of Superman just showing off his powers, but you have to give him Achilles heel so that the audience will not be sure whether he will make it or not. One thing is to find the killer, which you think, as a smart policeman, he will do sooner or later. But when his biggest enemy is maybe not the criminal but himself, then you bring more suspense into the character and into the story.
So your Harry Hole is a very ambivalent figure, we could say that. He's a drug addict, and he has problems to keep the relationship with his friend in the fifth book. And also his antagonist, Tom Wallander, is also very ambivalent. So is there a real role model for this characters?
I haven't, for me there isn't any role model. If you mean if I have used any other characters, real or fiction, to create Harry, he's kind of a mix of probably both some characters I know, real persons, and also I have taken some features from persons in fiction. For example, you have some features that are typical from the hard-boiled American crime and from the film noir tradition. And I sort of mix them together. But to make a believable person, I think any storyteller has to try to find within himself something that makes you understand this person. So of course I have to use a little bit of myself also to make this person real for me, especially since he's a hero. But also you mentioned Tom Waller. And I think also when you have an antagonist, you have to use yourself I mean, you have to use your dark sides, and to also to make to make the criminals or the antagonist believable, you have to give him some human qualities. He can't be a monster. So when I say that I use myself in my heroes, I also have to say that I use myself in the bad guys.
Let's have a look at your third book. It's The Robin Redbreast. And I've read in your short biography that some of this book is based on notes from your father, who wanted to write about his experience in World War II, but unfortunately he died. So is this a very personal book?
Yes, indeed, it's very personal. And like I said, much of it is based on stories that I was told by my father. Actually, the most of the dramatic episodes with, for example, this shooting on the New Year's Eve, where his friend is shot, and the first thing he has to do after his friend's been shot is to dismantle to fix the weapon and clean the weapon, and to clean away his friend's, you know, brain and blood that is frozen to the weapon. And that is that's my father's story. That's my father there. So it's stories like that. All the things that that I've been trying to make dramatic, it can't even compete with the things that's real in that story.
What really impressed me, and I think many readers are impressed by this, in your books we have Harry Hole. He is, as I said, a very ambivalent person, ambivalent figure, and he has, for example, this problem with alcohol, but there's also a lot of humor. There are some kind of dark humor, there are funny dialogues. So is this important for you to catch the reader, or why do you use this?
Well, I think I don't really have any good answers for that. It's just the way I write. It's just the way my dialogue and my thinking floats. I'm not really trying to be funny in that it's to be too comic. But often tragedy and comics walks hand in hand, and you kind of. As a storyteller and a writer, of course, you can emphasize the comic side of things or the tragic side of things. And I try to find a sort of a rhythm. You get tired if it's if you only focus on the dark side. This is, after all, entertainment. And although I have like a purpose for my writing, I'm trying to convince the reader that he should read the next chapter too. And I think I would be depressed if I didn't put any humor into it.
So do you think crime fiction should first entertain the reader?
I don't think you should give crime literature any mandate. Yeah, I think the only mandate that it should give crime literature is that it should be a good read. And whether that is a really dark story without any humor, if it's a good read, it's a good read.
So do you read crime fiction yourself? Is there any influence from other authors?
I read a lot, but not really much crime literature. I read some. I find that you have to look hard to find really good novels within the crime genre. There are, of course, good stories there, but I think there are more bad novels than good novels. When I read, I mean, I trust in some authors like Jim Thompson, the American writer from the 50s, and those are, I mean, brilliant stories. That that would be brilliant in any genre. Not necessarily. He's been called a dime store Dostoevsky, and that's exactly how I see him. It's and you have Frank Miller, the graphic novels, The Sin City, who is now a major movie, and You have, I like Dennis Lehane. I think Mystic River was really a masterpiece, both as a movie and but even more as a novel.
So, movie. Are there any plans for movies about your books?
Yes, there has been many plans. There has been. We started working at Rotkelchen, but it was too expensive. So we had to put it away because it was impossible to make it just for the Norwegian market, because it's only 4 million people in Norway, and you can only spend so much money on a movie. Yeah, well, that remains to be seen. But we are working on it. But last year I got a couple of offers, both for TV series and movies, and then I thought it through thoroughly, and I concluded that I don't want to make movies right now because I'm still writing the series, and so I'm afraid that movies is such a strong medium that it will take the focus away from the character in the novel, and it may even influence the writer on how he sees his own main character, and so I think I just want to write some novels now and then, but I hope that the filmmakers are still interested in a couple of years, and then I love movies, and I would really love to see Harry up on the screen.
So how many novels with Harry Hole could we expect?
I don't think you should expect any specific number, really, but you should expect him to develop and maybe change a little. And I'm sorry to say, you should also expect him not to live forever.
Okay. So you was, as I read in your biography, a musician, pop star, you call it. You was a broker and finance analyst, and now you're an author. Which of these professions do you like best?
I think I like writing best. Writing is probably what comes most natural for me. It's I think if you asked any of my friends when I was like 13 or 14 years old, and they were to choose between those professions, how they think I would end up, they would, for sure, they would say writer. It's like I was, I would have guessed, if they would guess a profession for me when I was that young, they would maybe say writer.
But as a young man, you also wanted to be a footballer.
Oh yeah! If you ask me, if I had to answer, I would have said that I'd be a professional player for Tottenham Hotspur. I was totally wrong, of course. But that was like my brother and me. We played soccer all the time, and we was all our dreams and all we were thinking about was soccer. But I was kind of I was maybe a bit untypical because I was the bookworm sort of football player that the other guys made a little fun of because I brought books along for when we were going on away matches and so on. So,
but this came from your family. I've read that you came from a storytelling family. That was a very big influence. Your mother was a librarian?
My mother was a librarian, and my father was a keen reader, and he always told stories, you know. He grew up in Brooklyn, in New York, in the Scandinavian area there, and so he always told stories from when he grew up, and I think that influenced not only me but also my brothers, that we become all of us storytellers. That we so it's all when we get together, it's always a kind of competition of who can tell best stories and who can actually. Well, scream loud enough to be able to tell his stories.
Okay, last question. Go back to Harry Hole once again. Will you ever go outside Oslo? No, for the last three books, he was in Oslo. The first book was in Australia. The second book, which was not published here in Germany, he was in Bangkok, and now he's been in Oslo. And will he ever get out of Oslo once more?
Yeah. I think he will get out of Oslo for trips, it's very inspiring to have him go outside Oslo, because often it's more it's easier to write about Oslo and the Norwegian society, for example, if you send a person abroad, because then you can see it from the outside. But on the other hand, it's like Oslo has now become Harry's universe, and it's like a closed universe that suits Harry, and it's also I don't think I will write like the first one when I went to Australia for 5 weeks, and it was like a crime story / tourist guide to Australia. I don't think so, but on the other hand, I only came to Hamburg here today, so I haven't seen much of Hamburg yet. But when I was in Berlin yesterday, I must admit that I walked there for, I was just going to buy some t-shirts, and then suddenly I've been walking around in Berlin for 3 hours, and I was so fascinated by the city that, and I thought that this would actually be a city that would suit Harry, and he would like to come here and maybe stay here for a couple of weeks. I think that it looked like his kind of town.
I see. So maybe he will be one time here in Germany.
I don't know, but right now, today, and maybe tomorrow, I'll be thinking about Berlin.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ja, soweit das Interview mit dem doch sehr sympathischen Jonas Bö. Der Hinweis auf die Bücher. Alle Bücher sind im Ullstein Verlag erschienen. Der erste Band, Der Fledermausmann. Der zweite Band ist nicht übersetzt worden. Der dritte Band, das ist das Buch, über das wir eben auch gesprochen haben, Rotkehlchen. Der vierte Band, Die Fährte. Diese Bücher sind mittlerweile alle als Taschenbücher erhältlich. Und aktuell ist der fünfte Band, Das fünfte Zeichen, alle, wie gesagt, bei Ullstein erschienen. Soweit der Krimi-Blog-Podcast für heute. Und zum Abschluss gibt's natürlich noch ein bisschen Musik von Dietere. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Alle weiteren Informationen finden Sie natürlich schriftlich auch nochmal im Krimi-Blog. Ich freue mich aufs Wiederhören und wünsche Ihnen noch einen schönen Tag. Lesen Sie gute Bücher. Lesen Sie Jonas Bö.
Kanten nærmer seg, jeg satser, så alt borte. Flomlyset ble slått av, og min første tanke nå har jeg gjort det. Stiv av skrekk, min strake kropp skriker et stille stopp. Jeg skulle aldri begynt med opp, men stav sprang, og jeg som ikke torde. Her så mørkt som i en grav, og alt jeg ser byen i det fjerne. Det noen der i kveld som har det leit, så bytter jeg gjerne. Og selv jeg på full fart ned, en hopper jo ofte det. Men som regel kan en hopper se, og alt jeg ser en annen stjerne. Vår tanke går i kveld til dem som mistet lyset midt i. Sats øyeblikket for dem som synes alt gikk skitt i 90, i 90, i 90 meters bakken.